Sports Podcast with Azra Begovic.
Welcome to the Season of Sports with me, Azra Begovic, for another episode where we're going to be talking about the Premier League. The Premier League's been back in action now for a good couple of weeks, and I'm delighted to have Jason Bird joining me as the Chief Football Correspondent for the Daily Telegraph. Jason, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm really good. Things are good here in Italy. Milan's getting, you know, definitely in working order. Things are getting back to normal. Yeah. And then, of course, you know, to have football back and the games back is not perfect without fans and everything, but at least it's something, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, and no, I agree completely.
Tell me, so obviously I'm sure you've been to your fair share of games the first couple of weeks here that football's been back. How has the whole experience been for you so far?
Yeah, it's been really interesting, obviously, because you've got the kind of very privileged position of being a football writer who's allowed to go to games, obviously, that millions of people, thousands of people want to go to. As you know, there's only 300 people inside each of the stadia for the matches. It's all very, very carefully controlled into which areas you can go into. But it's quite surreal, let's be honest. I mean, you know, behind closed doors, yes, we kind of understand that. But in this kind of environment of a biosecure stadia where everyone's obviously inside wearing masks, the measures being taken in terms of the safety and security and the medical protocols are so high. And I found the level of football has been quite decent, but it doesn't feel, and this is where you sound like you're complaining, but you're not, but it doesn't feel quite real. You know, it doesn't feel quite at the sort of intensity, and it's not quite the same with and it's a cliche to say this, it's not quite the same without the fans, but it really isn't. And what's been interesting for me is a couple of things. One is, you know, listening to what has been said on the touchline. You know, you hear more clearly managers calling instructions and players responding, which is great from a sort of football anorak sort of point of view. But also how some teams have definitely suffered more than others by the fans not being in the stadium. I was at Sheffield United against Arsenal yesterday, the FA Cup tie. And to my mind, that was the game that Sheffield United don't lose in front of a full house. Yeah. You know, when they got back into the game 1-1, I thought there's only one winner. Okay, Arsenal went down the other end and scored, but I think Sheffield United would have won that game under different circumstances. And you see some teams like that who have definitely lost a little bit because the fans aren't there. I guess all teams will say the same, that they suffer a little bit because the fans aren't there. But some teams seem to have benefited a little bit more by that. And another comparison I'd make is Brighton. And Brighton, to me, seem a team slightly liberated by the fans not being there, because obviously they were under pressure at the bottom of the table, in need of results. And maybe their style of football might have got a bit more, the fans be a bit more impatient with them. But I think actually they benefited from the fans not being there to a degree, which sounds awful saying that, because I don't really mean that in a longer term. But in the immediate, right now, they have. And we saw that with the way they got a result again, obviously going to Leicester and getting a good draw. And I think a team like that, you see, have perhaps benefited from the less pressure being on them. So it's been quite interesting from that point of view. Obviously, it's fantastic that the football is back, but it's not quite back, is it? Because we haven't got the supporters back and we haven't quite got the intensity back that we had before.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, there's always going to be positives and negatives to everything. And it's never a situation where I'm going to please everyone. I had someone on last time on my pod, and we were talking about, it's not the way we would have wanted sport to be back or football to be back, but it's what we needed to have back.
I agree. And I think that, you know, we talked a lot before. People talked a lot about what, you know, what benefit would it be to sort of, you know, to people in general and society in general. And I think it's any step towards normal life. And obviously football is an important part of life for so many people, is a good thing. And I think because they've been able to put on the games in these very sort of secure environments, I think that has to be a positive. And I'm not one of those people who says, oh, look, they should have just stopped the season because you can't play because the fans aren't there or whatever. Because let's be honest, there's an economic imperative to play for a start. I know that sounds quite distasteful, but it's absolutely true. They needed to play these games for an economic reason, but also sporting reasons as well. You know, we couldn't abandon the season. It would have been very poor, you know, for a league such as the Premier League or Serie A to stop, basically, because you know, there are no reasons for them to stop right now. That they could definitely get the football back on. They have the resources to do so. And I do think it helps society in general to have football back on. I think it's been beneficial. I think people are talking about the football. They are talking about the sport. It is an important part of their lives. And I think that's, if we can bring some important parts of people's lives back as quickly as possible, then that's got to be a good thing. And obviously, normal life has to try and return as best as possible. we won't get there yet with football until the fans are back in. We all know that, but that's not a reason not to play football. And I think we all anticipated and hoped for the return of football. At times, some of the games in the Premier League haven't been as great as perhaps, you know, we would have hoped. But I think also it's partly because the spotlight is even more on these games. And some of these games that everyone's watching all the games now because they're all live on television. But let's be honest, not all the games were live on television before. And we all know that some of the games weren't great. That's the reason why they were last on Match of the Day. You know, not every game is 4-4 and it's, you know, Kevin De Bruyne is volleying it in for 50 yards or whatever. So that happens anyway. And that's sport. I mean, you can't have an amazing game every game. I've actually thought there's been a few games that have been really, really good. I mean, really good games. And you know, hats off to the players. I mean, the Chelsea Manchester City game of the day. It's a great game of football, you know, and to produce a game of football like that so quickly back into the restart and with no fans in the stadium, I think it's a great compliment to the players that they did that. And there's been 3 or 4 games of a similar ilk. And I think now, obviously, we're moving even further towards the end of the season, the business end of the season. We'll see more games like that, especially towards the end of the bottom of the table and maybe the fight for European places. So I'm quite confident that it'll be quite enjoyable. And I think that people will be pleased as best they can that the football is back and that we're going to finish the season.
Well, you've led me absolutely nicely into my next question, because that's kind of what I want to touch on a little bit more, and that positive end in terms of what games or what players have maybe stood out for you. Because I watched that Chelsea-Man City game, and I thought that was a really, really good game. And I think, as you say now, it's going to be cranked up even more, a couple of the games that are going to be under massive pressure. So I think there's going to be some really good games coming up. But so far, which games or players have stood out to you the most? I mean, obviously, Kevin De Bruyne for me has been really good so far.
Absolutely. I was going to say De Bruyne because, I mean, I love Kevin De Bruyne anyway. To my mind, he's the best player in the Premier League. We vote for our football writers player of the year. I will vote for Jordan Henderson because I think the effect he's had and what he's done with Liverpool, I think, you know, he deserves it. But in terms of pure ability, in terms of the player, the one player, if I was, you know, a billionaire football club owner, the one player I would go and buy in the Premier League is Kevin De Bruyne. And it's interesting, again, I said at the start, you hear the managers on the touchline much more because obviously the fans aren't there. And basically, Pep Guardiola's instructions when I watched the Manchester City Arsenal game, the first game was basically to give the ball to Kevin De Bruyne. You know,
think Pep's a genius, but really, that's all.
Yeah, that was the name you kept hearing over and over again. It was give it to Kevin, and it's obvious why. And even in defeat. At Chelsea, he was the best player on the pitch. He's a wonderful footballer, technically superb. Again, somebody who just stands out in this sort of environment even more. Because the other thing you could say as a football watcher and a football writer is, obviously, sometimes when the stadium is full and the fans are there, you're not always distracted by it, but the atmosphere affects you. Sometimes you're looking around. Now, really, we're just concentrating solely on the pitch. You know, what goes on the pitch. And so that technical ability, those players who have that ability to get hold of the game, you know, by a scruff of a neck, dictate the play. I mean, Newcastle yesterday in the FA Cup tie against Man City made the fatal mistake. I understand why they set up the way they did, but they didn't put anyone on De Bruyne. So you just knew eventually Manchester City would find a way through because he would find a way through. I think he's impressed me massively. In terms of other performances, I've been very impressed by, actually, I thought Fabinho against Palace was excellent. He was back to his best, you know, was brilliant in Liverpool's performance. And again, they reached the levels of intensity in that game and sort of, you know, the way they played was really remarkable, I thought. And again, in front of an empty stadium, showed how they've gone on. And then Adama Traore, I think, has been really impressive. You know, the way he's come back, obviously, Nuno was managed his performances quite well. He's obviously come off the bench quite a lot, but the impact he's made has been remarkable. And, you know, you see a player in terms of the improvements that he's made over the last few years. His delivery now is so exceptional. He's so dangerous. He's taken 3, 4, 5 players to stop him every time he gets the ball. And then towards the end of the table, the other players have impressed me. I've already mentioned Brighton. I think Lewis Dunk has been a very impressive leader at Brighton, the way he's gone about organising and helping the team in the circumstances they've been in. And I think Danny Ings, who has had a remarkable season already, but has come back really firing. And it's interesting, I've mentioned Southampton and Wolves, and in the preparations for the restart, I talked to quite a few people about which teams they felt were going to be sort of at it straight away. And two of the teams that were mentioned to me were Wolves and Southampton. Obviously, Southampton had that blip losing at Arsenal, but in the two wins they've had so far, I think they've been very impressive away from home. And we've seen with Wolves, you know, I mean, a remarkable team, really, in terms of this. They're going to have like a 14-month season, aren't they?
Yeah.
And they're going to play into August, you know. And Nuno's got quite a small squad, and everyone talks to me about the sports medical science and the conditioning at Wolves. And we're seeing that time and time again, even in older players like João Moutinho, looking fresh, finishing games really strongly. I mean, I'd love to do a sort of behind the scenes at Wolves as to really what goes on in terms of the preparations they make for their players, because to me, they are really an outstanding team, outstandingly organised, great individual players. And as I say, something like Adama Traore, a real match winner who they're managing really well in terms of the way he's coming off the bench. And again, he's been very impressive in the games I've seen so far.
I read a really interesting piece actually on that with Wolves at Athletic. They wrote a really interesting piece about that, because Nuno likes a small squad.
Yeah.
He wants to sort of, you know, keep his players all active and involved. And he likes that side of things. So they like you said, they really focus in on that sports science department. And they looked at a behind-the-scenes look from a trip to Beşiktaş. So they went to Turkey.
Yes, I read that piece myself. Yes,
And
yes.
I forget who the game was in the Premier League the weekend, but how the detail they go into to make sure those players are ready. So you can see it all stems from the top. And Southampton and Wolves are very much a reflection of their manager, and those teams are always going to be at it and giving you the best most weekend. So I like your opinion on that. I mean, I guess we have to touch on Liverpool, champions now officially, you know, incredibly deserved champions, of course. Been such an unbelievable team for a while now, but this year they've taken it to the next level. I mean, I guess the question for them now becomes, what next? I mean, summer, financial, economic implications because of this whole pandemic. What are they going to do? They're going to have to strengthen, because, you know, for them to take that next step is, you know, not just to win a trophy, it's to win multiple trophies a year, multiple major trophies a year. What do they have to do to kind of even take that another step forward, if at all possible?
It's interesting, because you're absolutely right, because if you look at the last couple of years at Liverpool, they've really concentrated on keeping that squad together. And Jurgen Klopp has spoken about this. Obviously, with Borussia Dortmund, he had a situation where his best players were being cherry-picked every year, and obviously, mainly by Bayern Munich, coming in and taking his best players. And obviously, at Liverpool, that situation has been slightly different, and they've concentrated so hard on retaining their players. And we've seen that even with the upgrading of the contracts of their players. So obviously, their wage bill is rather large now at Liverpool, and obviously because they've been successful, rightly so. You know, obviously, a lot of big bonuses being paid to the players. But they are reaching a situation now where you wonder, what do they do next? Now, is it a question of just maintaining that standards and maintaining that hunger? Because tradition would have it, or convention would have it, that you refresh when you're at the top. You know, you look, the cliche was always, or the classic thing was always, with Alex Ferguson and Manchester United. Every year they would renew in some way, two or three new players, keeping everyone else on their toes, progressing the squad, improving the squad, moving on and moving on and on, moving on. Klopp's been doing that up until the last couple of years. In the last couple of years, he's basically tried to retain those players. But you've seen, since he arrived at Liverpool, the gradual improvement, or the dramatic improvement, because he's recruited very, very well. They've recruited very, very well, strengthened all areas of the team. Now, what do they do? Because COVID is going to affect Liverpool perhaps more than lots of clubs, but partly because they're extremely well run, but also quite financially strict club in the way they operate. And obviously, they've got, say, a big wage bill. They've got quite a lot of outgoings in terms of their finances. And I think the owners have made it quite clear they're not expecting heavy investment this summer. Now, we've seen that already with Timo Werner. Now, they were always regarded as the favourites to sign Timo Werner. And Timo Werner made no bones of the fact that he wanted to go to Liverpool. And then, you know, when the deal gets done, he ends up going to Chelsea, because I think Liverpool bought at the price in the current market and thought, look, you know, we can't justify spending all this money on a player right now. And that's very admirable, because obviously they're trying to run their club in the right way. To be fair, Chelsea had the funds available, so they did the right thing as well. But they can't stand still. So you're absolutely right. What areas does he recruit into, and how can he improve the squad sufficiently with the money available? It's going to be a fascinating thing over the summer with Liverpool, because at the same time, you also see a couple of young players coming through who perhaps he might want to push into the first team squad. But are they going to be good enough? Something like Nico Williams, the right back, and understudy to Trent Alexander-Arnold. Now, he's not going to get in ahead of Alexander-Arnold, but he might be a good addition to the squad. The one area I would look at this team and say, that's an area I would think you really need to think about strengthening is the forward line. They need an extra world-class forward, which is easy to say because somebody isn't going to dislodge those three. Does one of those three leave? I mean, does Mane or Salah go? Perhaps not this summer because of obviously the environment, as I say, with COVID. It may be that leaves it for another summer. So that might buy them a bit more time. But it is the one area that they've been very dependent on those three players in particular. But I think it's a conundrum for Klopp. Does he just continue to try and hold the squad together? Can he get more out of what he calls the mentality monsters? Or does he have to try and improve that squad because he sees those around him will do that? We know that Manchester City are going to have to go again. They're going to have to recruit at least one centre-half, probably two, a left-back. If Guardiola is going to stay, he'll want some money spent in this market. We're seeing what Chelsea are doing. Manchester United, OK, they're talking about not necessarily spending huge amounts of money, but they will spend. So although Liverpool have been by far the best team in the Premier League this season, they'll see the challenges gathering below them. So it's a really good and interesting question because I don't think anyone quite knows the answer to it right now because I think in his heart of hearts, Klopp will want to recruit. He will want to improve. He didn't speak to Timo Werner for no reason. But will he be given the funds available to do that? And will FSG think, hang on a minute, we can't do this in the current environment with all the other financial things going on with the COVID crisis? Can we as a club spend the money that perhaps we need to or the manager wants us to? Or do we have enough right now to retain the title to go again in Europe? And that's going to be the fascinating thing because one other issue is the age of the squad. And they've got an interesting squad because, you know, some of the players are quite young, like Alexander-Arnold and so on. But some of the players are not old, but older. Or also, importantly, at an age of, say, 28, such as Mane, Salah, where if they are going to leave, they have to leave fairly soon because otherwise they won't get the transfer fees for them that they want. You know, because if they get into the 30s, obviously, as you well know, the value will come down. You won't get the same, you won't be able to ask for the same level of fee. But then again, can you even do that this summer because of what's been going on? So I think the way things stand at the moment, I don't expect an awful lot of business from Liverpool. I think they will try and strengthen maybe, I'd say, in attack, maybe a left back because they've been, again, very dependent on Robertson and Milner, maybe understudying him, but they might need another left back or maybe a centre back. They're the sort of areas I think they'll look at. But I don't expect them to do anything spectacular this summer. I think they were going to. I think they were thinking of doing something big. But I think because of what's happened with the pandemic, it may have changed their minds.
Well, I think, you know, as you say, when you look at what this is previewing, this sort of month, 6-week sprint, what's going to preview is going to preview next season. Because when you look at the jam log of games that's going to be happening, I mean, they're squeezing more internationals into international breaks. You're going to have European competitions week after week. It's not going to be 2 weeks between games that the Premier League will have to be played, and what's going to happen with the cups, we'll see. But you're almost going to have to go on quantity sometimes rather than quantity and quality in squads because the numbers are just going to have to be there. The rotation is going to have to be there whether you don't want to. And that's what I look at Liverpool and look at most teams is, you know, they're sort of starting 11, 14, 15 players are very difficult to improve because they're just all absolutely world-class. So, you know, the likes of Lallana leaving is going to leave them, I think, a little bit short. So I think they're going to have to get a couple of bodies in one way or another, even with a couple of youngsters coming through because the squads are going to have to get bigger with the demand of games and what's going to happen in the next few months and next season. So that's the way I look at this sort of
situation. Yeah, no, I agree. I agree with that. And I also think, you may also find that some clubs might even just surrender certain competitions. I mean, there's a big question mark over the Carabao Cup, the League Cup anyway, whether or not it's going to get played or played in the right sort of, or in its normal format. I think there's a real question mark over whether those clubs in European competitions can even find the time to play in the Carabao Cup.
Yeah.
Obviously, they tend to come into later rounds anyway. But I think even the Premier League clubs as a whole are looking at the Carabao Cup and thinking, we're not sure we're going to be able to fit this into our diaries. Into our calendars, you know, what can we? How something's going to have to give here because the season is going to start late anyway, as we know. And as you say, there are more international fixtures to fit in, and people will want to try and get as much as they can into the calendar. So I think it's going to be a difficult situation. Where obviously we saw last season Liverpool fielded a team of kids because they were in the Club World Cup at the same time. We may see that the only way they can fulfil these fixtures is say, right, we're going to have to play a youth team. In the Carabao Cup, and that might extend to Chelsea and Manchester United and Manchester City as well, and other clubs. So that could be something that happens as well. But you're absolutely right. I think clubs are going to be reluctant to let players go. You know, they're going to be reluctant to sort of reduce the squad numbers because they know recruiting people will be expensive. So I think some players may have to stay when they perhaps want to go because the clubs will want to keep the numbers up and they won't be able to afford to sign somebody to take their place. So we may, and we all, I think we may also find the transfer market that there are far more swap deals. You know, I think clubs will try and keep the financial cost down by doing that, and also some creative accountancy, shall we say, in the way they do that. And we've seen that a little bit already with the deal that Barcelona have struck with Juventus for Pjanic and Arthur to swap in the way they've done that deal. I think we may get a bit more of that going on. And certainly the way I've been talking to clubs so far, there are two approaches. One is we want to get on with it and we want to improve our squads and we want to buy players. You've seen that obviously with Chelsea. And others are just like, well, it's just too early. We just don't know. We just don't know what our financial situation is going to be. And almost feeling it's almost distasteful to talk about transfers and next season and what they're going to do and how that's going to shake out, because lots of clubs, again, don't know the financial landscape is going to be with them. And as you well know, some clubs are far more dependent on others for match their revenue. So although the TV deals may be going forward and so on, and we know there's going to be rebates paid on the TV deals, some clubs really, really do need that match their revenue. Clubs like Arsenal, for example, you know, some of the big clubs need it much more often than even some of the smaller clubs. You know, a club like Watford doesn't really depend on match their revenue. It gets most of its revenue from TV, so it budgets slightly differently. But Arsenal, definitely, and Manchester United to a degree, definitely dependent on that match their revenue. And we just don't know when the fans are going to be back in or how many are going to be back in. So all those sort of calculations are whirring around in their heads. But at the same time, you know, I think that the market needs to get kickstarted. I think the transfers will happen, and not least because, you know, especially at the top end of the table, clubs are going to have to do something to try and catch Liverpool. You know, I don't think Pep Guardiola may well go ahead and win the FA Cup to add to the Carabao Cup, may even win the Champions League this season. It'll be an amazing season. But I bet if you ask him privately, he'll still be eating him up, but he's so far behind Liverpool in the league.
Of course, these teams are always looking to get better and better. Jason Burt joining me here to talk about the Premier League, chief football correspondent for the Daily Telegraph. Jason, now the title race is sorted. We're going to look at a couple other races that I think are the most intriguing in the remaining games. The race for the Champions League and also the European spots. Now, we all know it's a little bit dependent on what happens to Man City in the coming weeks and their ruling. But I guess we have Leicester in third on 55 points. And then I think you can maybe go down to Spurs at 45. Yeah. We're still sort of in this sort of top four, top five race. Who do you fancy for the European spots? I mean, Wolves are making a heck of a run here as well. And United are getting into form. So should be quite an intriguing race.
Yeah, it is. And I think that the Manchester United getting that draw away to Tottenham was really important to them. Because if they'd lost that game, and Tottenham had got the 3 points, and suddenly it bunches a bit more clearly. I think Tottenham have got very little room for manoeuvre now. They can't really afford to lose much more ground. I think Wolves are looking really, really impressive. It's not just the fact that they're a good team. It's just the manner in which they manage games. You know, even watching the game on Saturday against Aston Villa, it was only a 1-0 win, but I never really felt at any point during the game they weren't going to win it. And I think they're just in that sort of groove where you think, well, they will find a way to win a game eventually, and they win a lot of games late on. So I think they're going to be very, very hard to sort of finish ahead of in that race. I think Chelsea are doing extremely well. And the one I'm starting to fear a little bit for Leicester, really, because obviously they started fairly poorly. They haven't, well, unconvincingly, shall we say. Jamie Vardy isn't really scoring anymore. They're not playing badly, and that would be the worry for me, is that they're not playing terribly, but they're just not winning anymore. And if you look at the points, they gathered so many of their points in the first half of the season. And since, well, long before the lockdown, really, they've struggled to pick up points, or at least they've not picked anywhere near as many points as they did before Christmas. So their kind of form over a period of time is starting to worry me quite a lot. So I wouldn't be surprised if they get caught. So then you might be thinking, well, maybe they, and even though Manchester United are 6 points behind them, you think, well, United have coming together now, aren't they? If you look at that team that beat Sheffield United, yeah, I think that's a very exciting forward line. And if you can get Pogba and Fernandes in the same team on a regular basis, and you think that's not impossible now. And if you look at Martial in the way he played in that game, you look at Rashford, you look at Greenwood, and you think, well, really, they should be challenging higher up the table, and it bodes well for them next season, I guess, already. But I think if you look at the momentum with some of these teams, I'm actually thinking now, looking at it, that Leicester aren't going to do this, and I think Chelsea, Wolves, and Man United may all finish ahead of them. So I'm thinking almost like you can almost like shift them all up a space and drop Leicester down. So I'm looking at it thinking, well, I wouldn't be surprised if Chelsea finished third, Wolves finished fourth, and Man United finished fifth, or Wolves of Man United around, and then Leicester came out of it, and Tottenham. So I'm thinking that Leicester are the ones I look at as the most vulnerable team right now in that top group, even though they've got that points advantage as things stand, because they really turn things around quite quickly. Because as I said, the other team are in form. I think Chelsea have benefited from the break, which is interesting because they were one of the teams I was told were quite nervous about coming back, not necessarily because of the protocols and so on, but more because they had a lot to lose because they were in the fourth place already.
Yeah.
So actually they had a lot to lose. But if you look at the way they've managed the return, and Frank Lampard's management's been quite impressive. I think a lot of people were talking a little bit yesterday, after the FA Cup tie, about the substitutions they made at half time, bringing off some of the young players and bringing on some of the other players and so on. I think he's becoming a bit bolder in his team selections in that way, and making those sort of choices that are working out for him. I think that win against Manchester City was huge for them. I'm looking at them thinking they look like quite a confident outfit right now. I think the signings of Ziyech and Werner, obviously they're not going to arrive till next season, but it suddenly will put everyone else on their toes a little bit more. And you look at a team, they're thinking, well, we're going places again here as a club. You know, we're looking to challenge here. If the club's investing like this and looking to buy the players as well, I need to step up to be part of this. And those younger players are getting a little bit more experience, a little bit older, looking a bit better. So I think they've got a bit of momentum. So as I say, the way I look at it right now, I think Chelsea, Wolves and Manchester United, it wouldn't be surprising if all those three finish in the top five and Leicester drop out.
Very interesting. Very interesting. It's going to be a really, really good race. And some of those teams are hitting some really good form at the right time, which is always very important. Now, we move down to the bottom in the pressure cooker, that is the relegation battle. We have Watford. I think it's two out of the four, I guess you would say. Watford in 16th at 28 points. Aston Villa at 19th and 27. All, you know, four teams. 1 point difference between those four teams. You know, I don't know how to call this one. I don't know how you see it. You've probably seen a little bit more firsthand some of these games, some of these teams, how they look. What feeling do you have about the relegation race?
I always feel with that group down there, it's almost like the next one who wins a game will survive.
Yeah,
it's almost like,
that's a good point.
Do you know what I mean?
That's
it's almost like Bournemouth, for example, have got Newcastle on Wednesday. If they win that game,
then it could
suddenly think, then you're suddenly thinking, right, okay, they're going to be the ones that are going to do it. So it's almost like the next one who wins.
Yeah.
But they all don't look like they're going to win. Been really disappointed with Watford. I thought, let's be honest. With the squad they've got, they should never be in the trouble they're in, to be honest with you. I think they're far too strong a squad. I think they've been, you know, they had a terrible first half of the season. Nigel Pearson came in. But any team that beats Liverpool 3-0 can't be in the relegation battle. They just can't. It's just, it's
but that's the thing you say. I mean, they're too good to go. I mean, sort of their quality in the team. But all four of these teams have, I mean, you know, they've all invested.
Yeah, they do.
They all have players. You think, like, how is it possible?
Well, at the start of the season, people were talking about West Ham challenging for Europe, weren't they? Yeah. Looking at their front players. They spent £45 million on Haller. They had Anderson. You know, they've got Declan Rice. They've got all these different, you know, they've got Fornals. They spent £20 odd million on. They've got all these players. They've got Lanzini. You think, why they should? They say people were talking about them being in, you know, the top eight, and now they're obviously struggling in terms of relegation. We've got Bournemouth have got some very, very exciting attacking players. I think they've been a bit unlucky with injuries. Obviously, the Ryan Fraser situation has not helped them at all. Looks a little bit like, I mean, maybe this is a bit harsh, but it looks a little bit like they're feeling sorry for themselves a little bit from the outside. I think Aston Villa's recruitment, we thought at the start of the season, we just didn't know because they spent so much money on a lot of players. And a lot of young players, and you thought, okay, fine, you're buying a lot of potential, you're buying a lot of players, hopefully strategically to do well, but that's just not worked for them. They can't get a goal. So you look at all of them, and you think, well, it's very difficult to call. Instinctively, I think that bottom three will probably stay the bottom three. But how can I say that when it's only goal difference and a point? So as I said to you at the start, I think it's almost like the next team who wins will get such boosts from that win and will dispirit everyone else that might be it. And we also may be looking at a situation whereby, you know, it's almost like, I don't know, 34, 30, 33, 34, 35 points is enough to keep you up. I don't think you're going to have to get much more than that, really. I think one or two wins, and that'll be it, probably. So yeah, it's a very, Brighton have done extremely well to pull themselves out of it. I think they have pretty much pulled themselves out of it now. I think that win against Arsenal, as I say, talking about almost like one win, it felt like that win against Arsenal was that sort of it. Then fine, Newcastle beating Sheffield United, thought, well, that's it, fine, they're out of it. So it's a question of which one of those five can get their act together quickly. Now you look at it and you think, well, Watford's next game is away to Chelsea next Saturday, but by the time they kick off at 8 p.m, they could be back in the bottom three. So what effect will that have on them? You know, and it feels like they've missed big opportunities, I think, recently away at Bournemouth and at home at Southampton to get that win that they need to sort of pull themselves clear. You know, before that, we've got obviously West Ham at home at Chelsea, again, a difficult game. And I just look at that Bournemouth-Newcastle game, and if I'm Eddie Howe, I'm thinking, right, that's the game. You know, that's the game. Yeah. We win that game. Yeah. And suddenly, you know, we're out of it. We're up to, you know, up to 16th, and they're looking, and everyone's looking, you know, at us now, thinking, you know, we're the ones to catch. Yeah, so I would have thought he would look at that and think, that's a game I can, you know, home game on Wednesday. That's a massive game for them, I think, massive. If they don't get anything out of that game, I think that might be it for Bournemouth.
Yeah, talk about a six-pointer. I mean,
that's massive game.
Well, Jason, thank you so much for joining me here. It's been great to talk to you about the return of the Premier League. You know, as we said earlier, it's great to have football back and be talking about and watching these games, and hopefully we keep heading in the right direction as a sport, as a society and everything, and we can get back to the real product very, very soon. But really, really appreciate your time, Jason. Keep doing your thing. I love your work, and hope to talk to you again very, very soon.
Thank you very much for asking me on. I've enjoyed that. Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed having Jason Bird on the show here and listening to his thoughts on the Premier League return so far. It's definitely been great to have so much football again on TV and having a football feast with all the leagues being back and having some sort of normalcy around. So it's been great. Really enjoyed listening to Jason. It's been awesome to have him on the pod. Just to touch on a big piece of news that's hit us in the last 24 hours. Well, Cam Newton signed for the New England Patriots. Well, there you go. Well, if you've been listening to me here on the Season of Sports and other podcasts I've done, I've been saying something with the Patriots just didn't add up. You know, I either they're all into winning or they're going to rebuild. And I didn't feel like they were that team, that sort of team to be in the middle of nowhere and then in no man's land. And this sort of signing shows that they're still willing to win, and they still want to push to the limits out there. And Cam Newton signing on a one-year deal, low risk, high reward sort of deal, prove it. It's very much incentive-based. Something that I think is going to be very, very huge. Of course, he needs to prove his health. Of course, he needs to prove that he's good to go once again. But I think if you can get Cam Newton at 80, 90%, then obviously this gives you a heck of a chance, and this could be a game changer. So can't wait to see him in a Pats uniform. Can't wait to see how it's all going to work out. I don't want to get too excited, but big, big news. And, you know, the NFL is just a gift that keeps on giving. So there we go. Well, listen, guys, this will do it for this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening. As always, make sure you keep checking us out on Audioboom, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get podcasts, Anchor, all the platforms. We're there. Keep sending us your questions on a weekly basis. We're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Leave us a review, please. It means a lot to us. And I'll be back with you guys once again very, very soon.